Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
All right, time for a break. We'll be right back. 6:15. We're in Jackson Square at the Presbyterian. Today, WWO continues our week-long remembrance of Katrina and celebration of New Orleans, presented by Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser and Louisiana State Museums. Right now, the reason I was rattled before is, first of all, we thought he was going to be on the phone, but he came walking in, and we're so happy to see Carl Arredondo, former WWL-TV meteorologist. How you doing, Carl?
I'm good, Tommy. Good to see you.
Good to see you, and along with him is his partner, who is, of course, the second half New Orleans' hottest couple, and we worked together on the show Know-It-Alls, is Isis Casanova. And that's why I was so rattled, because I had no idea she was coming. How you been, Isis?
I'm doing great, Tommy. How are you?
I'm good. You miss the old days, the Know-It-All days?
I sure do. We had a lot of fun.
Yeah, Doug Mouton once phrased it best when he said it was kind of like Jeopardy, only nowhere near as good. Carl, tell me about when... I guess I'll take it back to Friday afternoon, because I was working in FM radio, and I remember calling a salesperson in and saying, look at this here, because I was watching the people get ready for the Saints game. We're in what is now the Benson Tower.
Right.
And I noticed it started to aim a little bit to the left here. I said, look at that. That's kind of interesting. When did it first get your attention?
Well, I think when it made the big shift off towards the west from Florida Panhandle all the way to us, basically, by the 10 o'clock advisory in the
evening. That's Friday night, right?
Friday night. Yeah. Everybody was enjoying the Saints game there, and nobody had any idea or clue, worried about the storm, because they thought it was going to Florida when they went into the game. After the game, big shift. People probably still didn't know till the next morning after celebrating, you know, a football game. And then that morning, you know, panic set in. Everybody saw that the track wasn't shifting anymore. It was right towards us. And we had less than 48 hours to really evacuate or hunker down across, you know, southeast Louisiana and south Mississippi.
What I realized yesterday, and I hadn't before, is that because it happened on Friday evening, people left work on Friday thinking they were going to be right back on Monday, and that's why there were so many Katrina separations, where all of a sudden it was like a bomb dropped and you didn't see anybody again for a long, long time, if ever.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we go through that all the time. You know, you go for a day, you come back, and everything's fine. You know, it wasn't anything big, and But we know now with the levee breaches and after all that water that there was just no coming back anytime soon.
And I'm not trying to be silly here, but you know that movie The Perfect Storm, where the guy is sitting there and he's looking at the screen ready in the air?
Yeah.
Was there a moment like that for you where you looked at this and your eyes got big and it's like, holy moly, I can't believe this?
Well, I think by Sunday evening when we saw Category 5 just sitting off our coastline, I mean, that put the fear of God into a lot of people that were going to stay when they saw that. And then that Sunday night, I was at the Hyatt Hotel. The broadcast had shifted from Rampart Street to our crew in Baton Rouge.
This is Sunday night now?
Sunday night, right before landfall. I saw the radar that we had on the air, and I saw where it was coming on shore in Plaquemines Parish. And I knew with the final track going over parts of St. Tammany and the Mississippi Gulf Coast that many people weren't going to have a home to come back to. And that included me, because I lived in Slidell at the time.
What did the people in Burris and Southern Plaquemines experience at about this time, I guess, 20 years ago?
About this time, I mean, 5 or 6 o'clock a.m. landfall, the winds 135 probably. It was expected.
Sustained.
It probably came on shore as a 3, even though it was predicted to be a 4.
Let me interrupt for a second. When you say sustained, that means winds are blowing at 135 miles an hour for how long?
For about a minute or so.
Okay.
Yeah, so it stays pretty consistent, and the gusts were even higher than that. So a lot of our power went out well before the peak. So we don't actually know reporting stations how strong the winds were. We know what winds were last reported before power went out a lot of places, and it didn't seem like very, very large winds, strong winds, but it was, and unfortunately it did the damage it did. And then after the fact, you know, the breaches and water filled in, Slidell got the water after the storm passed, and it sloshed all the way to the western part of Lake Pontchartrain, then sloshed back like a bathtub. You know, you push water one way, it comes back the other way, and it made all its way into southeastern St. Tammany Parish.
Throughout this week, as we've been talking about this, I want to make sure I didn't ignore the people, and I live in Plaquemines Parish in Lower Plaquemines. What kind of storm surge did they see? What kind of water came across?
I think they were about 25, 30 feet. So it was pretty high, because remember, a Category 5 hurricane just off our coast came on shore, even though it wasn't a 5 as a wind hurricane. That 5 storm surge didn't have time to come down with the winds, so we had a pretty large storm surge that really inundated the entire area.
And when we say storm surge, it's not a wall of water, right? But it's a consistent push of water. Define that for
a me. Consistent buildup of water as the storm continues to push the winds push the water towards shore. So it's a very fast increase in the water. So the water comes up pretty fast. You hear all the stories of the people with storm surge along coastal areas. The water came up fast. So not like a tsunami type, you know, where it's all one big wave that comes in, but a buildup of water that consistently increases as time goes on.
ISIS may know this. How tall is a ceiling in like an old shotgun house? Do you have any idea?
Usually about 10 feet. It depends on how old. It could be anywhere from 8 to 12.
So let's say 12 feet. You're talking about twice that, and it's just terrifying, because if you, I always say, if you go to, like, you know, you jump into waves and Destin and so forth, and you feel the force of the water.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah.
25 to 30 feet.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Just moving cars, moving everything around in its path.
Mm. Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Carl Arredondo, former WWL-TV forecaster, and, of course, my friend Isis Casanova, who is Carl's friend as well, and was with me on Know-It-Alls. What do you do now?
Wait, friend? Did you just say friend?
Well,
hey, look,
friend.
You know, I'm not giving a deposition here, Isis. I'm trying to make it nice.
She's my best friend.
Carl's friend. is that what you mean, friend?
It sounded like you said she was my friend.
Yeah, like I was Carl's
friend. I didn't know how to... Carl's significant other? I don't know.
Fiance.
Yes.
Oh, fiance?
Better half.
Okay, yeah. I didn't know fiance.
Better half.
Well, congratulations to both of you. I don't know why she's still seeing me. All right, 621 traffic now, WWL. All right, 626, we're visiting with Carl Arredondo, who was nice enough to join us in person, and his fiancée, Isis Casanova. We used to work together on that show, Know-It-Alls. Carl, take me from, I guess, landfall on, you from the Hyatt. You were at the Hyatt at what time and when, Sunday night?
Sunday night at 11 o'clock, we stopped our broadcast on Rampart Street, and then we went to the Hyatt for the night. And then by 9 o'clock in the morning on Monday, after the storm passed, we were able to leave the Hyatt and get back to the station and continue broadcast at Rampart Street. And we stayed throughout the day on Friday, Monday, through Monday night. And Tuesday morning, we woke up, beautiful sunny day, and then all of a sudden we hear water was coming into the city. So we knew that we might have to evacuate the station. We didn't know how far the water was going to fill up. Of course, when you're closer to the river, chances are the flooding's not going to be as bad.
Did the studio on Rampart Street flood or not?
Not at all. Okay. We had a little damage to one of our fences in the back parking lot, but the station held up well.
But so you didn't know.
We didn't know, yeah. So out of precaution, we went to the Hyatt, and then when the water was starting to rise on Tuesday, at least when we found out the water was rising, we made our way to our transmitter site on the West Bank and continued broadcasting from there, because fortunately, after Hurricane George, our company that owned us, Belo, fortified that transmitter site and allowed us to be the only station to stay on the air, broadcasting TV-wise, during, before, and after the storm. So we were broadcasting from New Orleans the whole time.
Do you feel like you are part of history with all of this? I mean, because it was a historical, life-changing event for just about everybody who lived here.
It was, and I do in a way, but... I think after landfall, it was more of a news story as opposed to a weather story. Mm-hmm. So my part of it ended after landfall and, you know, the storm surge and everything. And then it was more of definitely news. So all our reporters and anchors all kicked in. And, you know, we even did in the weather department trying to forecast, because we still had very hot conditions afterwards and made things more unbearable for the people that didn't have any place to go and were stranded outside the convention center and the Superdome. So weather was definitely a factor at that point, too.
Let me talk to your fiance for a second. Isis, you were watching this unfold. You were living in Mexico at the time, trying to pick up this report, that report, very familiar with the city. What was going through your mind?
Well, it's, you know, I grew up here, so even though I was far away, it felt like I was part of the chaos. And my family was here, and I couldn't get a hold of them. All the lines were down. It was just impossible to get call anyone. And I don't know why, but at some point, I was just so desperate, I just put it on Facebook. Since most of the people that I know on Facebook are from New Orleans. I just said, my family's missing. If you know where they are, please let me know. And at some point, like just like a day or two, because they were evacuating, they had Wi-Fi wherever it was, somewhere in Texas, I think. And that's how I communicated with my family, because I could not get lines from Mexico to New Orleans at all.
What was going through your mind as you were watching these images of fires, flooding, this, that, the other thing? Did you think the city would ever come back, honestly?
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Until this day, people still ask me, oh, New Orleans, oh, that's the place where they had that hurricane. It went from Mardi Gras to the hurricane city.
Still. Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you both for coming in. A pleasure seeing you again, Isis and Carl as well,
you.
Man.
Tommy,
I love you both.
Always good, Tommy.
You bet. Thank you all for coming in. And we'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk to Allison Plyer, who is the head of the Demographics Center, chief demographer at the Data Center. We'll talk about how the demographics of the city and the area have changed. 6:30, time for WWL First News. All right, 6:40, 20 till 7. Quickly to Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, who's got this fantastic exhibit here. Billy, before, though, we talk about that, I want to talk about your role in Katrina and Plaquemines Parish, because there's a picture here that's part of the exhibit that features you and what you did.
Yeah, we rode out the storm 14 miles from the eye to protect these. I had a riding center for special needs children to protect those horses. Brought them over to the house, rode it out. We got in the airboat and headed south. We rescued about 30 people that lived with me for months. I didn't even know some of their names. And then hundreds of animals. Airboated from my front door. My house was built on a mound of mud above the river. And never saw a politician. And that's what prompted me to run for parish president. But every time a storm gets in the Gulf, I don't sleep. It's affected me forever. And walking in here today, seeing some of the pictures. But this exhibit, we wanted to make sure, for years since I've been elected, you leave here depressed, some people crying. We wanted to show what New Orleans and Louisiana has done to rebuild. We want you to see the suffering and tell those personal stories, but as you leave, we want you to see the new wall. We want to see the video of all the areas that have recovered, that we're back and we're getting better every year. Not only for Louisianans to see it, but visitors will know if they go through a disaster, you can come back. And so I think they did a great job of really make you leaving here with a positive and showing what volunteers can do to help a city come back, because they really made the world a difference, the volunteers from all over the world.
You know, I remember reading the statement yesterday from the National Weather Service from 20 years ago saying that all animals will die, all people will die when it was a Category 5. What kind of effect has it had on you? Because, I mean, you live this. This is not anything that you watched on TV or covered.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
From a distance or anything, you were in the middle of it.
You know, I got goosebumps when I walked in and heard the reports a hurricane is coming. And then as you walk through, it gives you a queasy feeling.
Right.
It does. Like I said, every time a storm gets near the Gulf, I don't sleep at all. And it's going through that. And then we had three other hurricanes after that flooded Plaquemines. We came very good at the response. We were able to get animals out and did a little better each time. But, you know, it's something that we'll be with forever. It's hard to believe it was 20 years. After reliving it this week, it almost seems like it was last year.
Yeah, but I think it's great what you're doing here, because it's like, okay, and we all remember and we commemorate, but we've moved on since then, and that's a message that you got to get out there.
Absolutely, and we want to show that for the visitors from around the world that, look, this city was devastated, but look where we are now, and every year we're getting better. And so, and highlighting those volunteers, those first responders, but also showing the pain and suffering, the people wading through the water, the Superdome. But we've come out of that, and we're doing better. And so I think they did a great job of making that happen.
Tell me about the symposium that's coming up as well.
Yeah, we're going to be we invited all the leaders back. Aaron Broussard is going to be there. Just a discussion. What happened? What could we do differently? And hopefully out of that, some changes will come. Some things that we might pick up on that our leaders today can be better prepared when we do have another disaster.
And the exhibit is here at the Presbyterian. It's open when?
It's opening today. We're cutting the ribbon today, and it's open free today. Come on in and see it, and then it's going to be indefinitely here. We're gonna leave this here as long as
people come see it.
As long as people come see it, and it's a great exhibit.
Thank you for stopping by. Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, our pleasure as always, sir. We'll take a break. Come back live from the Presbyterian. We're going to talk to Allison Plyer, head of the data at head of demographics at the data center, when we return on WWL. Live here at the Presbyterian today, WWO continues our week-long remembrance of Katrina and celebration of New Orleans, presented by Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser and Louisiana State Museums. He was with us just now, and we were set to talk to Allison Plyer, the chief demographer at the data center. I don't know, Tim. I can't see you. Tell me, where are we? All right, Allison Dreddy. Good morning, Allison. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Tommy. I'm well. How are you?
I'm okay. Tell me about where, I guess, before and after Katrina, the demographics of the city and the area, and maybe at 2015 in between as a stopping point.
Oh, sure. Right. The city had 484,000 people, according to the Census 2000, which is really the best data we have pre-Katrina. And then now we have 362,000, so that's a drop of, you know, about 120,000 folks. Mm-hmm.
That left, you know, Allison, if I might jump in, that left, you're talking about City New Orleans proper, so they didn't necessarily leave the area, but they left Orleans Parish, or do you want to get into that more?
Yeah, we can certainly get into that more. Well, first of all, the trend is essentially post-Katrina, you know, we lost essentially the whole city, right? And by the 2010 census, we were back up to 343,000 folks, right? So we were still recovering. Then the 2020 census, still recovering, 383,000 people. So in the last 5 years, at least, we've been losing population. And that's important when and many folks talk about this, and it's not just the city. The whole state has been losing population for about 5 to 8 years. So we had about 10 years of recovery and then many years where we've been losing population. So Katrina was not the only factor in the population trends in the city and the state.
That amazes me. Is there any reason behind that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, what people don't realize is Louisiana has one of the weakest economies in the entire country. We've grown jobs by only 2% since the year 2000, whereas the nation has grown 20%. You know, other southern states, Georgia, Florida, you know, are booming, right? And you know, without jobs, folks have to start to look elsewhere. And so, you know, that's really the biggest driver of the population loss in the last roughly 10 years.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We're broadcasting live from the Presbyterian as we commemorate and remember the 20th anniversary of Katrina. We will take a break for traffic right now on WWL 651. All right, 6:57, Tommy Tucker, quickly back to Allison Plyer, chief demographer at the Data Center, talking about the differences between before Katrina, mid-recovery, and now. Allison, when it comes to the different, I guess, racial breakdowns, economic breakdowns, what does the data show?
Sure. When we look at New Orleans has about 120,000 fewer black folks, but also about 24,000 fewer white folks, and then actually more Hispanic folks. So the population of Hispanics in New Orleans has doubled and is now about 30,000. And this isn't surprising because the population of Hispanics across the country has been growing rapidly. You know, white folks are older on average, and many have aged out of childbearing years. Hispanic folks are younger on average, and therefore are more likely to have children. And so we see this across the country and in fact, native-born, just to be clear, native-born Hispanic population is growing very rapidly. Obviously, there's been immigration surges in the last couple of years as well. So that's changed not only the population of Orleans Parish, but every parish in the whole metro area. Jefferson Parish, Hispanic population is almost 90,000 now, up from about 30,000 before Katrina. So we're seeing really big jumps in the Hispanic population, which is making up for some of the population loss that we're seeing.
I don't want to assume, but is it safe to presume that that's because of the Katrina recovery?
No, that's a good assumption. So So a lot of folks moved here because to help with the recovery, right? And the recovery took so long, right? So many years of still building homes and rebuilding homes. You know, that, you know, they might have come as single men, right? But then, you know, 10 years later, they're in their 30s, you know, they, you know, settle down, get married, have kids, right? So, yeah, a lot of people did end up settling here because they were here for so long helping with the Katrina recovery. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys forecast into the future at all, or do you just see what is?
You know, we really don't forecast in the future. There's just so many variables, right? You know, clearly one of the critical elements for the state and for the region is going to be shifting the economic focus. What we've been focusing on for the last many decades is oil and gas, tourism, petrochemical production, shipping, and logistics, all of which are great industries, very important to the country, but they're more and more using mechanization, right? So we've put, and private industry has put literally billions of dollars, more than $20 billion in petrochemical manufacturing throughout the area and in the last about 11, 12 years. And we've actually seen declining numbers of jobs in that industry because they're more and more using robots, et cetera.
Thank you, Allison. Appreciate it. We're at the Presbyterian Jackson Square. We'll be here till 4. Coming back after this news update on WWL.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.